This meeting is now being recorded.
And we will move on from there. Okay, so for a roll call, helps if my screen is in place. Drew Bagley. Okay, Drew's not here yet. Stanley Dutton.
Here.
Oh, thank you, sir. Calvin Brown. Not here yet. Jordan Buchanan. Jason Busick. Or Dukic, excuse me.
Hello, Kylie Kent speaking.
Okay. Carlos Raul Gutierrez.
Here.
Oh, Carlos, you can't speak. There you go. You're here. Thank you. Maureen?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Taili Khan?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Gal Mosweu? Megan Richards? Carlton Samuels? Ravi Shankar? Barbara Stiebel? Waldo Siganga? David Taylor?
Yep.
Wonderful. Jonathan Zuck?
Here.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, everyone. And with that, we will hand it over to Margie.
Oh, hi, everyone. Actually, I think we're handing it over to Jonathan. Do you want to say anything? And then we'll move on to the scheduling topics.
Sure thanks, Margie. Thanks, everyone, for making the call, call number two. And the little sub-team on the terms of reference has been hard at work since the last call. So looking forward to sharing that work with you. But I think we're going to start with looking at what the scheduling looks like going forward. And for that, I'll hand it over to Margie.
Great. Thank you. Move to the next slide. Elisa, do you want to walk us through some of the scheduling issues?
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, good evening for those of you in other time zones. So I quickly just wanted to spend a few minutes on scheduling and future meetings before we get into the meat of our discussion today. Also just because before we lose anyone toward the end of the call. So we've been working through all of your different time zones, which has been a bit of a challenge because we have 9 time zones to work with. And as you may have seen in the slides I sent out yesterday, it's difficult to find a time that works for the bulk of everyone without inconveniencing about half of the team. So our proposal is to alternate calls every other Wednesday from 1300 and 1400 UTC. This would make it a little bit more, doing that in the earlier time would make it a bit more convenient for those of you in the Far East, for example. So that's our proposal for now. The alternative would be to just do a doodle poll each time and try to find a time that works for the most people who can attend. The benefit to the first option, of course, being that you have a set time and everyone knows when to be available for those calls. So we wanted to just put that out to the group and see if there was any sort of consensus around that.
Hello. Ravi from Delhi, Dehradun, joining in.
Thank you, Ravi. Carlos asked if I say Wednesday. Yes, so we intend to do these every other Wednesday.
A recap for my consumption, please. So the next meetings would be every Wednesday?
Yes, Ravi, I think you may have missed the beginning of what I said. We're proposing calls every other Wednesday at 1300 and 1400 UTC, and we would alternate time.
Every other Wednesday, not every Wednesday.
Correct, yes.
Thank you.
Jordan, I see your hand raised.
Sure, thanks. Yeah, this is Jordan Buchanan. I guess seems odd to only be rotating by an hour difference. I guess I haven't seen that before. Is that just based on the particular geographic makeup of the review team?
Yes, it is. And I'll just pull up the next slide. You can see that trying to rotate between other times would be really difficult without losing, putting a good chunk of the team at a significant disadvantage.
I guess I wonder if given the small amount of difference in the rotation, whether I guess I would argue, given that, it might make more sense to just leave the time consistent from week or from meeting to meeting as opposed to doing the rotation. It would just be easier for us to manage our calendars if we kept it at the same time, if there's only going to be a one-hour difference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I think the difference would be that the 1400 time is 10 p.m. in China and 7:30 p.m. for Ravi in Delhi, so it makes it a little bit earlier for them. It's not pushing it quite so late into the evening. That's why we were trying to figure that out, but I certainly understand what you mean by a one-hour difference isn't that big of a difference. Carlos suggests 13:30 or starting on the half hour rather than on the hour. Any other comments or suggestions?
David here. Yeah, I was just going to say I like the idea of having a fixed time, whether it varies by 1 hour or 1.5 hours. I certainly see Jordan's point. It seems a little bit bizarre. It depends whether the hour does make a difference for those people concerned. But I just prefer that idea than doing a doodle poll and having that each week where some of us miss it and we end up with calls where we're not quite sure when it'll be, because I just think that might cause more problems. If I know this is happening every 2 weeks, I can make sure I set that time aside and plan in advance, and I think that's probably the case for most.
Okay. I'm sorry, Kylie, could you? I see your hand raised. Go ahead.
Hello. This is me. Kylie, can I speak?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, if we are going to rotate between 1300 and 1400 UTC, I would suggest we just take the 1400, because I'm an owl person. So actually 10 p.m. for me is actually preferred. So that will make it easier for the people in Los Angeles. Well, just a suggestion. Thank you.
Well, we thank you very much, speaking for those of us in Los Angeles. Well, then it sounds like there's some consensus that we should just stick with the consistent time of 1400 UTC, and we'll do that every Wednesday for either 90 minutes or 120 minutes, depending on what we how we see the agenda shaping up. I get a sense of if the group agrees with that. I see a few green check marks here in the Adobe Connect room. Okay. Kylie, I see your hand is still up. Did you have something else you wanted to add? Oh, took it back down. Okay. All right, great. Well, then we will stick with that time. Thanks, everyone. Margie, did you want to touch on future meetings?
Sure. As we think about the next meetings before our face-to-face, particularly the next one, which is February 10th, we were wondering whether it would be a good idea to invite analysis group to come and talk to you folks about the work that they have done on the economic study. Elisa, do you want to elaborate on what you have in mind there?
Yes. We have seen, obviously, on the email list, there's been a lot of discussion about the competition issue. Clearly, this is something that's on all of your minds, and we want to make sure that you have the most information at your fingertips. So the economic study that we commissioned last year, based on an interim recommendation from the previous group that was working on metrics, they are getting ready to do the second phase study, as I think I've mentioned to some of you, to do a comparison with the baseline results that were gathered a year ago. So the group is planning to, sorry, that's the group, our vendor is planning to send out their data request in mid-February. So we thought this would be a good opportunity for them to come and speak to you about what they've done, what they did in the first study, what their methodology and approach was, what data they were able to ask for, as well as what they received and what they didn't receive, and how they're changing the approach this time around, and for them to collect some feedback and input from you. So we've spoken to them about this. They're open to this possibility and are eager to talk to you and hear your ideas. So we're planning this presentation for the next teleconference, which is on February 10th. And then we have a similar presentation from our survey vendors, Nielsen, who conducted the surveys of consumers, what we're calling consumers. These are internet users and registrants. That would also likely be a short presentation on their methodology and approach and what they're changing moving forward, because we're working with them now on the questionnaires for the next round survey. So I wanted to propose that to the group and see if that would be interesting to you all, and if there were any specific requests you had for either of these sessions.
Aliza, it's Jonathan. I think it would be a great idea to have this presentation on the next call because the work is starting so soon, and there do appear to be, to judge from the list, some fairly strong opinions about this report. Further to that, I think it might make sense if they can to share some sort of methodology outline or something like that, a description of methodology in advance so that folks that care to can spend a little bit of time thinking about the questions and suggestions that they want to ask and make.
Mm-hmm. And I think we can have that sent to the whole group shortly. Thanks for the suggestion. I note that Jordan says in the chat that we may need to talk to them more in the LA meeting, and Jordan, I agree with you. There might be more discussion that would be worth having. We would want to see how this first conversation goes first, but I think that's a good suggestion. Any other comments or thoughts on the meetings or what you would like to see on the next two agendas?
Lisa, this is Margie, and just for the face-to-face meeting in Los Angeles, obviously there's going to be a lot of work that's going to get done there, but as staff, we're just trying to make sure that we prepare at least the briefings that you would like to see before the face-to-face meeting so that you have sufficient information to really start digging into the work that you need to do. To the extent that there's anything else you think you might want to hear from staff or have us prepare for the Los Angeles meeting, that would be great.
And, yes, we can also discuss this on list. And I note that Kylie is asking us to have the meeting available remotely for those of us who aren't, for those of you who aren't able to attend the face-to-face in Los Angeles, and we are absolutely planning on doing that. Jordan, yes.
Yeah, so just to follow up on what Margie just suggested, where do you guys stand in terms of, you guys had already outlined a series of five briefings, and on the last call we discussed trying to do many of them prior to LA. Is that going to be scheduled into our existing meeting slots, or are you guys planning on doing a separate cadence for those briefings?
Uh, We haven't really decided yet. I think we are waiting to hear more from the group on what other things you wanted added to the agenda. I think I see an opportunity to do maybe one or two, probably one briefing, I should say, on the next teleconference, a little bit more on the history and the development of the applicant guidebook. And then for the face-to-face in LA, we would like to do perhaps one or two, set aside an hour or two on those 2 days where you could talk about some of these implementation issues with staff, because we think those are going to be particularly relevant as you get into the program implementation part of the review, particularly with the program implementation review report that you'll be looking at, and the staff that worked on that are all in Los Angeles. And would be happy to spend some time talking to you about how they put that together. So that's kind of how I see that shaping up at this point, but nothing is firm.
Ravi here. Can I request a...
Yes, hello? Ravi, go ahead. Yes.
Okay. One factor that I would like to bring in is comparative analysis across regions on the growth of new GTLDs vis-a-vis the legacy GTLDs and the CCTLDs. I'll just give an analogy. I just spoke to the Afilias representative in India today evening and asked him about the growth of new GTLDs and new IDN CCTLDs. I was told that the new GTLDs and the new IDN CCTLDs are minuscule in comparison to the legacy GTLD and the CCTLD. To just put it in perspective, .in, the Indian CCTLD, is around 1.8 million. .com is close by, it's around 1.6 to 1.7. And the other new GTLDs are a few thousand, 4,000 to 5,000. And the IDN CCTLDs which have been introduced are also in that range. Now, I really have to put this thing, are we a .com and a .in country? So that gives me a thing. It's like a brand building. So brand is actually. So this particular facet gives me the thing that let's not restrict our study only to the competition and consumer trust on the new GTLDs. Just like any brands which get to focus, Surf, New Surf, or any other Windows 9, Windows 10, etc. One of them gets cannibalized and then moves on and gets merged into the other. I just thought we need to have a little broad-based study which will get us insights onto the growth of new GTLD. Over.
Hey, Ravi, it's Jonathan. Thanks for your comment. We're going to, as we discuss the terms of reference, we're going to be discussing this very thing. I'm in complete agreement with you because we... Our mandate is to look at the degree to which the new program, the new GTLD program, has promoted an increase in competition and choice. And so the only way to discuss a delta is to discuss it in the context of the existing legacy TLDs. So while obviously you're not going to catch up to 16 years worth of registrations in a month, in a year, it's going to be something where we need to talk about the new GTLD program in the context of the legacy TLDs, for sure, I think. But we'll be discussing it as part of the terms of reference discussion that's coming up next.
Thank you, Jonathan. I think with that, we're done with this section of the agenda, so maybe this would be a good time for you to transition to the terms of reference discussion.
Sure. Thanks. This is Jonathan again. And so there's been a little sub-team working on developing the charter for the group or the terms of reference for the group in terms of what we're going to try to accomplish. And that's all been circulated. And so we will hopefully everyone will get a chance to read the document and comment on the specifics. But what I thought I would do is just give a high-level overview of where we ended on some larger questions and open those things up for discussion, and as well as anything specifically that you saw as you read through the document. If you hopefully all have a copy of the terms of reference that Aliza sent via email, but I just want to go over some of the larger issues, as I said. One of them is we decided to separate what we might otherwise call a work plan out from the terms of reference. So that is still something that we need to do next once we have agreed to the terms of reference. So actually how we will go about accomplishing the objectives that we laid out in the terms of reference is not yet in the document and is still something to be discussed in the next document we need to create. Also at a high level, we made a couple of important distinctions. One is that we would make a distinction between findings and recommendations. Because we are called on in this review to report on the degree to which the new GTLD program has improved competition, choice, and consumer trust, and to discuss the success or challenges encountered with the application process and the mitigating procedures that were put into place. There is some portion of our final report which will be findings about, you know, how we feel the new GTLD program did in reaching those objectives. There's also the notion of interim recommendations, and I think that's important, and it came up, a couple of people asked about it on the email list. And the idea behind interim recommendations, and we discussed this a little bit in our last call, is that if there are recommendations that policy development processes or specific implementation processes be improved on or launched, it makes sense to have those, and there's a broad consensus about the need for those things. It makes sense for the group to come out with some interim recommendations so that those processes can begin, rather than waiting arbitrarily for a year to begin, and thereby extending the overall time that it takes the organization to consume this review. So also built into the terms of reference is the notion of interim recommendations that will bake both to staff, both for staff activity and GNSO activity that might happen in tandem. And then finally, our final recommendations, if you will be broken into a couple of different categories. One is things that staff could implement directly that don't require further policy development. So those might be new things for the staff to do, or they might be revisions of old policy recommendations or just implementation strategies for staff. And then there might be further recommendations for new policy development that needs to be done, and those will be part of the recommendations that go to the board. It's our goal that with each of these recommendations is to justify why we're making those recommendations by, wherever possible, objectively looking at the data and the conclusions that we drew about competition, choice, and trust, and how we documented the reality of those measurements, and then use, if possible, that same data as a means of measuring the success of those recommendations. So built into the recommendations, ideally, will be the means by which their success can be measured by the next review team, so that we're trying to get more objective and more data-driven in the way that we both measure the success or failure of the program, but also how we measure the success or failure of the recommendations we make when they get reviewed by the next CCT review team. So that's the overall structure of the document. As Elisa says in the notes, it's a 12-page document, so we're not trying to go through it piece by piece like that, but that was the overall structure of the terms of reference, and I'd love to just open that part of it up for discussion, and then we'll go into some of the specific open questions that we wanted that we didn't resolve completely and wanted to discuss the group as well. So I wanted to open up just this overview for any questions that you might have or clarifications that you need. Thanks a lot. Or did all of that make perfect sense?
Well, I think, this is Ravi here. I think you have summed it up very succinctly, and maybe we need to go through the metrics, because I feel the metrics are a little, too many in number. So if we can perhaps bring down the number of metrics, so that can lead to more insightful insights.
So, Ravi, I think that's a good suggestion, and we will need to figure out how to build that into our work plan. I mean, one of the things that we had discussed on the first call is potentially dividing up the substantive work by issue, whether it's competition or choice, and even some of those probably will have some subcategories, and having sort of team leads on each of those issues that drive that process. And I think as we go into the substantive work of looking at the metrics, we should definitely try to consider which ones seem to be most valuable. There was some effort to do that by the implementation advisory group, which we'll talk about in the next section, but that will be one of the tasks of the substantive review, is to look at those metrics and try to determine which ones are most useful in drawing conclusions. So we didn't go into that level of detail in the terms of reference document, Ravi, but I definitely think that that's an important part of the process going forward.
Okay, I agree with you.
Any questions about our overall structure, about what we're trying to do, the notion of interim recommendations so that some things can happen in parallel, the idea of having these final recommendations be based on, hopefully is the degree possible based on data, and then building recommendations that are also based on aspirational outcomes of that data down the road.
Just to respond to your governments, I just would like to say that competition, consumer trust, and choice, on which you have said that let's focus on both findings and recommendations. Findings will emerge out of the data or statistics, and the recommendations would be broad in category. Now, if we look at these terminologies, someone has tried to definitely focus on what competition means, what consumer trust means, and what choice could be. Now, they could be isolated and they could be interconnected. I mean, I am looking at it from the way in which the real world products, whether it is on an e-commerce platform or on a regular commerce platform, is actually transacted. In this whole game, could we segmentize it into A, competition, B, consumer trust, and C, choice? And go ahead, or should we try to see the interlinkages between, among the three? Because it's a very tenuous argument as to whether competition fosters consumer trust, or it's on the basis of choice that a consumer trust is built, and then that leads to competition. I mean, it's a way of bottom up or top down. That's the way we can perhaps argue it.
And so, Robbie, I think that's a good conversation when we get into how to create some sub-teams. And I think that we need to have that conversation. One of the other things that I didn't discuss specifically and that we can is that we did come up with some definitions for consumer choice, competition, and consumer trust in the terms of reference. So if you get a chance, open the document and let us know what you think about those definitions. I don't know how easy it is to bring them up now, Lisa, to look at those definitions in particular. But we did try to define them to some extent in isolation so that they could be studied separately without necessarily making the assumption that competition would lead to choice, but just looking at competitive behavior and as its
right.
definition, for example. So that's how we try to define it in the term of reference.
So,
but as we try to divide up into separate issue teams, I think we will be both addressing those issues, alone and how they kind of interoperate.
Oh,
I mean, what you are talking about is something that we certainly
abuse.
There was a big discussion in the work group about how to divide them up.
Right.
Stan, do you have something you want to say?
I'll go by the broad consensus because I think I'm just triggering a response because I am trying to see things from a consumerist standpoint and then derive onto what we are into this particular working. That's how exactly
right.
I've looked at.
Okay,
so, but
great.
I go with the sense of the house. That's
great. Stanley?
Just a quick comment on competition. The definition seems to focus on non-price competition. I assume it's the case that we will be focusing on prices as well. Those are a couple of the metrics that were originally proposed, and I assume that we'll focus on price as well as non-price competition.
Well, Stanley, again, I don't know how easy it is for Elisa to get that definition up on screen. It doesn't specify price or non-price competition at all. So the definition we settled on was simply talked about behavior, and price could certainly be part of that.
Yeah, the point is, I guess I was just struck because it talks about differentiating products, which sounds like non-price competition to an economist, and the word price never appears, and that's just... It struck me as something that I assume we're going to focus on as well.
Yes, and that's a reasonable assumption. So, the definition was written by me, not an economist. So it's simply active attempts to differentiate their products, and I guess in my mind the notion is price would be one of the ways you could differentiate your product.
Well, I guess economists usually distinguish the two.
I see. Okay. Well, we can put in parentheticals some examples or something like that. But since we're we can go forward with the assumption that price is part of the conversation. For sure.
I'm not worried about getting the definition right at this point, changing at this point. It's just that the metrics seem to focus on both kinds of competition, and you reassured me that's
and they're meant to. That's right. They're meant to. That's exactly right. And I see here in the chat there's some discussion, and so I've fallen behind on it. If you haven't had the time to look at these definitions, we can either try to look at them in some detail now and discuss them, or you can post some comments to the list after you've had a chance to consider them in some detail. Like I said, those were just some discussions that took place on the terms of reference sub-team. So you can see the definitions that are here. And if you have a – if you have some recommendations or suggestions now, then go ahead and raise your hand. Otherwise, please post them on the list.
I'll go with the existing definition. Thanks. Ravi here.
Okay, great. Should I take the green ticks to mean that you're happy with the definitions? I guess.
Well, I am happy with the definitions. I have no.
Thank you. I got your vote. I'm looking at the screen, the people that are on the Adobe Connect, Ravi. Thank you.
Okay.
I see that Carlos has asked us to define the market, and I think we're talking about the DNS market. That's right, or the gTLD market. I think that it will be worth talking about one of the conversations that's come up on the list is the degree to which we're trying to incorporate the ccTLDs into that market definition as well. But I think, as Jordan says, we don't need to come up with a definition of the market or the boundaries of the market right now. We can make that as part of the sub-team on competition. Any other questions or comments right now based on the definitions that are on the screen? Okay, so seeing none or hearing none, we're going to move on from this, but this does not block you from posting something to the list, a query to the list of something you think needs to be updated as part of the terms of reference. Let's do that quickly within the next week, though, please. And as Jordan says, give consideration to whether or not it could easily be done by the sub-team devoted to that category, or if it's something that we need to make sure and get clear in the terms of reference, and otherwise we will seal this document and move on to our work plan going forward. Elisa, if you would be willing, could you go back to the slide about the open questions and things that we wanted to make sure and discuss on the call today?
I think Charlotte's making that.
So one of the key, I'm sorry?
Somebody said
something that I didn't hear. Okay. So thanks for the slide. So we had some open questions that we thought should be brought before the entire group instead of decided definitively by the terms of reference team, and wanted to open them up for conversation to some extent. One of them is the issue of scope. This is a question that has come up on the list and has already come up on this call, which is how to interpret the language of the review and define our scope in such a way that it is most useful but also doesn't involve, as we say sometimes, boiling the ocean, trying to take on more than we can handle. But the we're specifically asked, you know, whether or not the new gTLD program has been successful in enhancing competition, choice, and consumer trust. And so one of the questions is about whether or not we should be looking at all at the competitive behavior among legacy TLDs. In other words, do we need to look at, is it enough to look at whether or not the new gTLD program was itself competitive among new gTLDs, or do we want to look at, how legacy TLDs play into the overall competition within the DNS market. So I open that up for conversation. Stanley. You prefer Stan or Stanley?
Stan, I think the answer is we obviously have to look at the legacy GLTs. I mean, I guess one of the obvious questions for me is what effect does the entry of the new GTLDs have on the behavior of the legacy GLTs? And one of the dimensions of that would be the extent to which their prices have been affected. It's probably going to be very difficult to do that because of data limitations, but it's an important question to ask. This is an interesting, the economists often call an event study. We have a major perturbation, the entry of hundreds of new GTLDs, and the question is, what effect did it have on the market? And one of the most obvious questions to ask is, what effect did it have on the behavior of the incumbents?
That's right. I think I tend to agree with you, Stan. Are there others that feel that feel differently about that?
So I apologize. I can't put my hand up, but this is Jamie. Can you hear me?
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. Go ahead.
Sure. So I completely agree with Stan. I was a little confused by the way the question was asked, because it looked like he was asking about competition among legacy TLDs only. And it would seem to me that while that may be an interesting question, it's less relevant for example, you know, how is .com now competing with .org? Just throwing out random example. That's an interesting question, but it's somewhat detached from the impact of new GTLDs. Unless there is a line that goes from GTLD, new GTLD versus legacy has an impact on legacy versus legacy, I would think that we would want to stay out of the boiling.
I think you're right, Jamie. I don't mean to cut you off. I think that's just the wording of the question. So I don't think anybody had the intention to look at it that way. I think the use of the word among probably was not right and was misleading. So I think this is just meant the reason that I think maybe that among should be by legacy GTLDs. On the call where the sub-team call, we were looking at the term of reference. I was trying to come up with a terrible example, but if, for example, a legacy TLD let's say PIR had decided that they weren't going to allow you to renew your .org if you bought a .club, because that was in theory a competition with the nonprofit market or something like that. So they made you choose. If you want to keep your .org, then you can't get a .club, right? That would be anti-competitive behavior on the part of PIR, and so that's why it was phrased this way. It was because of an example like that. But I think what we're trying to discuss is whether or not we're looking at the market as a whole and the competitive impact on the market as a whole. So it sounds like we have rough consensus about that. David, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I was just going to agree with Stan and Jamie, because I think there's an inevitable relationship between the two, and we've got a question mark on there being, an even playing field. You know, for example, we need, you know, with registry agreements being identical for new GTLDs and old GTLDs, et cetera. So that even playing field discussion certainly comes to bear on what we're going to be looking at, I think.
Well, and that's a good segue, David. Thanks for your comment, because it almost seems like it's too easy a question if we're just looking at our findings. Where it might get more complicated, and Stan, is that a new hand or an old hand?
It's a new hand. Okay. I just one
observation. Oh, a new hand.
It's a new hand.
Okay, go ahead.
I've learned to put my hand down and put it up again, so I'm. It's a new.
All right, next.
I just to take an old example, which I always thought would be a kind of interesting sort of reference point. It's what's the nature of competition between .biz and .com? I mean, they've been around for a while. That might let us learn something of something that's taken place over a longer period of time that might give us some inkling of what's likely to happen over a longer period of time with the new GTLDs. So I even think that the competition among the legacy GTLDs is actually could be somewhat interesting.
Interesting observation, Stan. I mean, let's put a pin in it. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, just to point out that prior to the launch of the new GTLD program, there were some economic studies that included, observations on the scenario that Stan just outlined. So before we start commissioning other studies, it might be worth looking at the old ones. I am not vouching for the quality of those studies, just that we should look at them before asking for new studies of competition between legacy buildings.
I absolutely agree with that. I'd like to see those.
So let's make sure that we get a hold of those studies and put a pin in that conversation and make it part of the competition work for sure. So the other question I was going to raise then had to do with recommendations, and this is where David started to tread and where obviously pushback will be far more considerable among the community is making the decision amongst us that we should include legacy TLDs in our findings is one thing. Suggesting that the group is empowered to make recommendations about that directly impact legacy TLDs is another one, and I think that's that's going to be a tougher question to answer. I don't know if people have immediate feelings on that, but that's going to be a more complicated question to get answered and one that will be more politically sensitive, I think. I don't know if there's any thoughts on that.
Just a thought. Ravi here.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any boundary layer conditions, or is it possible to go beyond the boundary?
Say that again. Is there a set boundary around the review team, you mean?
No. Are there any boundary layer conditions that thus far and no more, or are we as a group entitled to go beyond the boundary, extend the boundary?
Well, that's just it. I mean, the language is somewhat vaguely worded in the review, and to some extent we're generating a document at the end of this, and it will be up to the board, the GNSO, and others to decide what to do with the document that we create. So there isn't, I don't think there's really going to be boundary police confining us to discussing or making particular recommendations, but neither are we empowered to impose any reforms on the organization either. So whatever we will do, we'll have to make a good case for, I think.
Right. I get that point. My only feeling is, as suggested by other members, the legacy GTLDs, and as I mentioned, CCTLDs. I think we need to get them into the loop to get an understanding of how the pie is growing and the share is growing. So I think the two are related and interconnected.
Sure, and certainly the CCTLDs that are used like GTLDs, I guess, is just one of the areas in which people are curious. I mean, obviously, .tv has become a pretty popular domain name for a number of folks. So it feels as though we've got some consensus around incorporating and doing this review in the context of the entire market, not just the new GTLD market, and we will set a high bar, but look at any competitive behavior among legacy TLDs and by legacy TLD operators, and when looking at the causes of some of our findings, and I guess we'll cross the bridge when we get to it about recommendations within that scope.
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect.
And again, let's try to wrap up this term of reference as quick as we can. And Jordan, I think you're saying essentially the same thing. Let's try to wrap this up as much as we can. So please, I know you just got this document, so if you can take it as a to-do item after this call to look at this in some detail and make some detailed recommendations back to the sub-team, that would be really great so that we can put a bow on this term of reference and move on to the work plan. Okay. So another issue was defining competition, which we already managed to discuss. The third question that was discussed was the role of observers. One of the questions is under the moniker of transparency, how do we want to allow people outside the group to follow along in the work and or provide feedback to the group as it goes along? And so there are a number of different suggestions that came out. What seemed to be the consensus of the terms of reference subteam was to allow anyone to listen on the teleconferences that wanted to, but that actually providing feedback would be via an email alias that went to a subset of the team and the staff that would then try to take this feedback and integrate it into the appropriate place in the agenda as those topics came up. Because as you know, the feedback can be kind of random and not fit the schedule or work plan that we've set for ourselves, but that we would try and compile the feedback that we received from the public in such a way that we could inject it into the process at the appropriate time. So that was sort of the conclusion of the sub-team, which is let people listen in on the calls. Obviously, they can still listen to the MP3s after the fact and read the notes after the fact as well, and that there would be a single email alias that folks would use to provide outside feedback to the group, as well as having the ability to reach out to their representatives within the various stakeholder groups and advisory committees to provide direct feedback to their representatives. So the email alias is really about capturing the individuals that don't know or don't feel as though they are adequately represented on the group. So that was the conclusion of the team, but I wanted to open that up for conversation for the broader review team and see how you felt about that. So let's open the queue if people have some ideas. Lorraine, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understand the process here. When you say an email alias, does that mean we are not going to know the identity of the folks who are giving feedback from the public?
Oh, no, Lorraine. What I mean is that we're going to publish an email address that will be like feedback at CCTRT. So we'll
okay.
Definitely capture who the stuff came from. It's more like, and again, this is the open question, do you want them to be able to write to the group as a whole, so that everyone would get every email that came from the public, or would we set up a specific alias for that feedback?
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you suggest then is sort of a curated funnel so that we don't get each and every comment, but that there's some filtering, which personally I would be in favor of, because I think, as everyone knows, there tends to be an avalanche of email in working groups just among the members, much less the public who might have views on it.
That's right. Any other, so you're in agreement then, it sounds like. Are there any other comments or questions that people have about this approach? Carlos, in the chat, you said something to the effect of "open to all identified observers, please." So, can you explain what you mean by that? If you're speaking, then you might be on mute. Because we don't hear you. Oh, he can only participate by chat. Okay. So, Carlos, if you can hear me, if you could rewrite that line, open to all identified observers, what you mean by that, and if you mean that you agree with our approach, or if you're trying to make a modification, then I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Carlos. Meanwhile, how would you please go next?
I agree that there are a lot of emails on even on just this discussion.
Can you speak up? You're very, very faint.
Hello? Can you hear me now? Is it better?
A little bit. It's just very soft.
Oh, okay. I was just saying that I agree that we might be overwhelmed by the responses on the mailing list, because you know there are always a lot of comments and you just get by everybody saying thank you, and so that might be a bit much.
Okay, great. It sounds like you agree with our approach that we should have a curated email address for outside feedback. And that we'll then integrate it into the agenda as those points come up in the schedule. So thank you.
Thank you.
Stan?
Yeah, I like the fact that our timeline includes the issuing of a draft report for public comment in December. I think we're likely to get better comments when we've actually, you know, put something on paper, then we're likely to get kind of along the way. So I've had experience with something like this in the past where I've been on groups that have released reports or draft reports, and you tend to get more focused responses that way. And so I like the fact that it's on our timeline.
Agree, Stan, and it's just I think folks – felt like there needed to be some way for people to listen in and provide feedback along the way, in addition to those more structured comments that would be the result of a draft.
Well, maybe we can have them all directed to the chairman.
I think that will be the case with the help of the staff, right? So, I mean, that's probably what the sub-list will be, is me and Eliza sorting through the feedback that comes in from the public, but I'd rather that than have the entire list inundated with those comments. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Jordan, go ahead.
Yes, thanks. I'm mostly reacting to what Stan just suggested, and I think by way of context, and Jonathan just pointed out, like usually in these ICANN processes, there are periodic opportunities to react to documents that are produced, and usually explicitly a public comment period. You can probably look back at some of the other review teams and sort of see that cadence. As a longtime participant in these ICANN processes, I find it would have often been helpful if these processes were a little bit more open early on in terms of getting feedback, as opposed to periodically just dumping a bunch of information and expecting the public to respond in a specific comment window. And so I was one of the ones advocating for a more ongoing feedback process as well. And I think the idea is that, for example, we would have meetings and so on where people could listen in, not necessarily participate in the discussion in real time, but, you know, react to meeting notes and so on. Just so if there were sort of minor points along the way that will allow us to fine-tune our approach, we can get that feedback earlier rather than doing a bunch of work, dumping it on the public, and then hoping that we didn't have to have significant course corrections as a result of feedback at that point. So I think the idea is to do both what you're suggesting, and but to have some real-time responses as well.
Thanks, Jordan. That's a good explanation of why we came up with the approach we did in the terms of reference. I guess I will say that part of the success of this, I think, will be with each of us going back to our various constituencies and providing reports on a fairly regular basis, informal reports, as opposed to drafts coming out of the review teams. This doesn't apply to you, Stan, as much as the rest of us, but going to our constituencies and saying, here's how things are going, here's some decisions that got made, and gathering that feedback on a proactive basis, I think will help to remind people that they have representation on the review team and that you are the conduit and the most efficient conduit for feedback, so that the actual sort of random feedback via this email alias will be the conduit of last resort rather than the more considered interactive process that hopefully will take place among the various constituencies. And so, you know, those of us that are the, you know, part of the GNSO will go back and talk to the stakeholder organizations and on a fairly regular basis and keep them up to date so that we can gather that feedback. Does that make sense to everyone? So part of the onus on it will be on us to proactively solicit feedback from our constituencies to remind them that they are our constituencies. Carlos, does that make sense for you? I don't want to lose your comment. I'm specifically not a fan of how things went down in the CCWG. I feel like that's too much probably. Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so I think we've settled, Elisa, on those mechanisms for observation, and that were similar to what we rested on in the terms of reference conversation. Then the other question, and I may ask Jordan to introduce this question a little bit, is this notion of delegates or substitutes. You know, can the meetings only be attended by the members of the team, or can someone delegate a substitute either in their absence or because they have specific expertise, et cetera, to participate on a particular call? Margie, do you want to speak to that issue as well? Is that why your hand is up?
Yeah, actually, I wanted to just close the loop on the prior discussion. You know, as this role of observers, one of the questions that we were considering is, well, how do you tell people that they can't observe? So I was suggesting perhaps an email to the SO and AC list so that, you know, others can, you know, that aren't members of the review team know that that's a possibility.
Yeah, why don't we work together? I'm happy to compose such an email. Like that to describe the way to participate as an observer. Once we have the email alias set up, and then maybe we can detail who their reps are, if you will, as well, as the first line, and then put the email as this sort of catch-all for anybody that falls through the cracks. So let's sync up in the next couple of days to figure out how to construct that email. Jordan, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but can I ask you to discuss your thoughts on delegates or substitutes and the role that you've seen them play and that you think would be useful here so that we can open that up for discussion?
Yeah, certainly. I don't have actually strong feelings here. I just know from some familiarity with previous review teams that the practices here have varied somewhat in the past. But certainly, some of the previous review teams have allowed members to appoint delegates, whether they're on the team or, you know, participating, you know, perhaps like someone who often participates as an observer could temporarily be appointed as a delegate by a member. Perhaps there's, in some cases I know that members of review teams have been receiving staff support from within their own organizations, and so from time to time someone who is staffing the effort might be appointed as a delegate instead. And I just wanted to open the question in the terms of reference as to whether we thought it was useful to be able to temporarily have members temporarily appoint someone to act on their behalf in the review team, or would we just consider sending an observer and having the member send apologies in situations where they weren't able to participate or thought some other participation model made more sense.
Thanks, Jordan. Are there any thoughts on this idea? Margie, is that an old hand or new hand?
It's a new hand.
Okay, go ahead.
Question for Jordan. Which review teams are you thinking of? Because as I explored it with staff, as we were thinking back some of the past practices, I believe it's been mostly related to a backup for the chair or the vice chair or the sometimes review teams have, you know, the CEO or designate or the, I think in HRT 2 we had Larry and Fiona was able to participate on behalf of Larry at times. But I didn't think it stand out to the rest of the review team. One of the things I worry about from a staff perspective is if the person isn't tracking all of the discussions and all of the work that's happened before they, you know, participate in a particular meeting, that it might actually affect the productivity of the team itself, because we might be rehashing issues that have already been resolved.
Well, that was somewhat good feedback. Hopefully it's been out. But I think maybe Fabro is feedbacking. All right, seems to be gone. So Margie, I think, yes, I think the examples I can think of generally tended to involve relatively more senior members of some of the efforts. But yes, Fiona acting in Larry's stead, or I believe sometimes Brian Cute had a delegate acting on his behalf in ATRT2, would be examples that I would think of in the past. Carlos earlier raised the point about CCWG, where there were a lot of observers, and I think periodically members of the CCWG would appoint observers as delegates in the discussion. So I think there's been a few different models. I didn't take the time to do any particular research, but certainly I appreciate the point about folks staying up to speed, but at times I would imagine it might be useful to advance the conversation if a member wasn't able to attend but had stayed or had been working with someone on something to be able to make sure that that the conversation was advanced without necessarily having the member present. Which I think is the general intent of the notion of a delegate.
I mean, perhaps we can play this somewhat by ear and make adjustments as we go. I kind of like the idea of being able to bring somebody in to talk about something, like if you've had a senior staff member inside Google that has worked on a particular issue or has crunched some particular numbers and let them make a presentation. Rather than thinking of it as a substitute for somebody that can't make the call, which feels like it could get unruly, I like the idea of being able to invite someone to participate on the call directly in advance and say, this person, you know, is going to make a presentation or help explain this effort, and it can come from, you know, a variety of sources, whether it's an expert you know, like this, the Nielsen is an example, but it could be, like I said, an employee at Google that did some specific work that Jordan wanted to, that person to share with the group. That might be a better way to think about it, rather than I've just appointed this person to be my substitute because I can't make it. It ought to be motivated by a reason for that person to be on the call, rather than the absence of the other person, which feels more arbitrary. Does that make sense? Thanks, Carlos. Any other comments on this topic?
Jonathan, can I add something? This is Aliza.
Of course.
So I was just listening to your discussion. I mean, it sounds like what you're looking for here is outside expertise or people to bring in a different perspective. Maybe we should change the language from delegate to something that's more appropriate, like outside expertise, outside experience, and perhaps even move this to a separate section or just include it in the work plan.
I think that's where I was heading. I again, don't want to steamroll the consensus of the group, but I think I was heading toward getting rid of the term delegate and instead making it guest speaker or something like that.
Okay, great.
But if folks feel strongly about being able to have someone they work with, or if I wanted to have somebody from the IPC, have Greg Shatton participate in my stead when I couldn't make it, and people think that that's what we should do, then please speak up. I'm personally less inclined in that direction, and personally don't care what previous teams have done. So we should just decide for ourselves.
Yeah, David here. Jonathan, I'd agree with that. I think we do that on an ad hoc basis if necessary, and I think it's more for external expertise that would be good, so I'd shift it, yeah.
Okay, great. So those were the primary questions that we, as the subteam on the terms of reference, had identified. I encourage you, but hopefully very soon, to read through the TOR in some detail and to raise some issues on the list if you think they were overlooked in this discussion. We talked about the big issues and not the details in a way. So if there's something that you see as an issue, then please raise it quickly so that we can put a lid on this particular effort and move on from it to work on our work plan. Okay? So what is next on the agenda? That might be me and Karen talking about the CCT review. Oh, Jamie, go ahead.
Thanks. So one, I can send a note about this after the call as well, but one thing that struck me thinking back on one of the last economic studies that was put out before the launch, in which this was done by, I think it was Greg Rostin, Stan, you know him, and some others, but they had predicted in one of their studies that it was unlikely that the introduction of new GTLDs would have much of an impact on market share or price levels, but did have the potential to have an enormous impact on innovation. So the introduction of new products and services that were not available under under the thing. So so while we may not find a huge impact, especially since some of these haven't even been delegated yet, on pricing structures or on market share, there could be a finding of innovation, which is, you know, is increases consumer welfare. And so I would hope that I don't know how you go about measuring that except anecdotally, but Stan, you may have some better ideas.
Yeah, I guess one way to do that is to sort of identify previously unserved market niches in the new GTLDs.
So an example of that is it's been cited a bunch of times is Dot Bank. Dot Bank is a closed GTLD essentially that's open only to credential banks from around the globe, and their pitch is that, and it's run by the Financial Services Roundtable or part of that outfit, and their pitch is to provide a trusted space for consumers to use and not be subject to hacking or going to redirections to fraudulent websites. They may attract only 100 registrants, those being the some of the largest banks, but if consumers use it a lot, even though there's only 100 registrants, arguably it's a really successful GTLD.
Yeah, that actually suggests that a kind of some sort of non-quantitative study. We might want to do a few case studies of new GTLDs exactly like that.
Yeah, and there's even an example in the legacy world, .cat, which is Catalonia, which only had 50,000 registrants. Now, apparently, my understanding is for their target audience, it was an important website. Important TLD, and used somewhat extensively in Barcelona. But by if you compare it against any of the .com or some of the others, it would look like a near failure.
So I think where you're headed, Jamie, and I want to cut this off a little bit because I think we're a few steps ahead maybe with this conversation. But it could very well be that there's two areas that are worthy of some consideration by the group. One is looking at what might be called sectoral competition. So in other words, rather than looking at the market share of .bank against the market share of .com, you'd be looking at the market share of .bank among banks versus the market share of .com among banks to see if it had created competition in that respect because of their differentiated service. And then we'd also look at the impact the .bank had on consumer trust, which was another part of the review. So I think there was two things there, one which is making sure which is why market definition becomes the incredible the most difficult part of any kind of competition analysis is market, because if you look at the market for .bank, it's not the entire universe of .com, and so you want to look at it in a sectoral basis. And so I think those two things are probably both true, that there's going to be areas where choice was created that didn't have a dramatic effect on market share right away, but that provided interesting and innovative choices. But there's going to be sectoral competition as well as improvements in consumer trust, potentially, from these kinds of new GTLDs. Does that capture where you're headed, Jamie?
Yeah, it captures a lot of it, but I think, also capturing, figuring out how to look at quality as well as quantity is going to be a challenge.
That's right, which I think will probably, quality will probably be about trust as much as anything else, I guess. But yes, we certainly can't focus on a pure price-based definition of competition. I mean, for no other reason than some of the legacy TLDs have, price caps on them. There isn't a purely fluid market there either, so.
Right.
Okay. Should we go on to talk a little bit about this CCT working group and the work that was done leading up to this review, or are there other questions about the terms of reference?
Jonathan, it's Margie. If I could just jump in about the
yes.
last point.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The building the work plan, including the remaining team leadership structure. I just wanted to identify what the next steps were for that.
I didn't know if this bullet was one of the things that was part of the terms of reference, or if it was, because this is its own effort. I didn't think of it as a bullet. So I thought that was more about the fact that we had separated the work plan from the terms of reference. But if folks want to dive into that discussion, we can do that as well. I mean, we obviously need to do it, so we can do it now.
Or just how to build a work plan. Do we want a sub-team, the same sub-team that was working on the terms of reference, to try to start scoping out some of the work
sure.
issues? And then along those lines, the question about originally we were talking about, once we identify, you know, perhaps work streams or subjects to explore, that we might also identify additional leaders depending upon the issue.
That's exactly right, Margie.
Right.
My guess is that it's not exactly the same work team, so maybe we should just take volunteers to be on the work plan sub-team. Because I think it would be really good to have Stan on that team, for example, to talk about how we might divide this effort up into its different substantive categories. So it might not be the same group of people. I guess I would like to make a call for volunteers to be on the work plan development team.
Did I just get volunteered?
Yeah, so you don't even need to bother volunteering, Stan. I did that for you. I'm a full-service chair.
Thank you.
So you don't need to volunteer right here, but please send an email to, I guess, Aliza. Or me, if you're willing to be, or put in the chat here if you're willing to be, to volunteer. And this is about coming up with the subcomponents of the findings portion of our report. So if you have some ideas then about that, then please be a part of that team. One thing that I want to put out there for discussion, and maybe it's for the whole group or for the work group team, the work plan team, is that given the fact that we're just now starting the new economic study and the survey, does it make sense to focus our efforts on the parts of our review that are less quantitative? Which include how the application process went and the mechanisms that were put in place to mitigate difficulties associated with the new GTLD program. Does it make sense to put those first in front of the CCT part of the review to allow the accumulation of more data? I say that also because as we talk about interim recommendations, more of those interim recommendations may come out of the examination of the application and the mitigation mechanisms than they do out of the more interim recommendations may come out of those than do out of the CCT review. So I don't know how folks feel about that, if you have immediate observations there, it might be something we discuss on that particular sub-team. Stan, you've got your hand up.
I know I'll start getting impatient about looking at data long before we get the next report from the analysis group. So I hope we're not precluded from doing that. Just in this regard, yesterday I came across a website that had data. I don't know if people know about this, or probably, you probably all do, called ntldstats.com. Do you all know about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it seems to me, you know, I looked at this and immediately got out my spreadsheet and started doing calculations, and I think this is interesting. I would not personally prefer to wait till the analysis group gets their report done.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Any other thoughts on this? And so my only caution to you, Stan, obviously, is don't let's make sure you don't go off and try to form semantic conclusions on your own based on data that you find on the web. and bring those conclusions to the group. Try to make sure that you're part of a collaborative process to reach conclusions.
Well, trust me, you already know. I've already sent some preliminary calculations to the group, and you can rest assured that I will continue to do so.
All right. So beyond that, let's just take volunteers for a work plan. Hopefully the staff have captured the ones that are in the chat, but please email if you're willing to be on that sub-team to define the subcategories of the review, if you will. And I think that, again, we don't need to shut you down entirely, Stan, but we probably will need, as part of our work plan, to figure out a mechanism to come up with these interim recommendations sooner rather than later if they're going to require extensive policy development work in tandem with our review efforts. So figuring out how we get to those interim recommendations in the quickest way possible has got to be part of the work plan as well. And I'm assuming, is that a new hand, Stan, since you?
I'll lower it, thank you.
All right. All right, and so Margie, I think that's our next step is to have a little sub-team work on the work plan, and then we'll identify leaders once we define what the work streams are going to be.
Right.
Is that
thank you.
Scratch the itch? Okay. Okay, let's move on. And so I think Karen is up next.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Karen. How's the sound? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sounds great, Karen. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm waiting for the slide, but the next couple of slides were I thought I would give some context as to the work that's been done leading into this review, as well as the some of the other activities that are happening around the same time within the ICANN space. So there's about a few slides on this, and then I think later we'll have Jonathan and others talk about the specific recommendations for the process leading to recommended metrics that we're using here. So this slide is just focusing on what we've done in preparations for the CCT review team. The actual review team process is the yellow bar there, starting in 2016, and subject, of course, to the actual timeline and work plan that's established. But you see the two blue bars up there, which are the consumer survey done by Nielsen and the economic study that we've discussed. Those were both two-part exercises, and so the idea was to do a baseline as soon as possible and then repeat the exercise a year later, and we have so that there's some additional data to be used. So we expect the about midway through the year to get those second sets of data to you. The other bars that are below that are relate to the other parts of the scope of this team in the AOC, which are to assess the effectiveness of the application and evaluation process and the effectiveness of the safeguards that were put in place for the program. And so how we've gone about compiling information on those is essentially we've taken what quantitative data we have, what statistics are available, and then we've also tried to bring in some sort of qualitative component, whether that's through we've held sessions at ICANN meetings sometimes to get feedback. We're doing a call, an open call later today to get feedback on one particular area. And then each of those things has also gone through public comment. And so we've been able to incorporate feedback that way. So those topics, which we call program implementation review, and then the safeguards encompassing both DNS abuse and rights protection, have all been, you know, planned out so that there is data available for you to consider. The DNS abuse one at the bottom, which we've also been discussing a little bit on the list, is has started later than the others, or is not as far along, and we anticipate around May having that full set of information report to give to you on that. So that might be helpful for the work plan. Next slide. Thank you. This, I think, is essentially a recap of what I was saying. So the areas that we've broken down the work in terms of preparing for the review basically outline, track the outline of the topics that are described in the affirmation of commitments. So there are the whole set of metrics around competition, choice, and trust, the program implementation piece to look at the effectiveness of program processes, and then the bottom two, looking at the effectiveness of the safeguards. Those will all, as I think most people know, form recommendations from the team that go to the ICANN board, and they are to take action on the recommendations within 6 months. Next slide. Thank you. And the last thing I wanted to mention is, you know, this is one review that's occurring of the new GTLD program, and there are a few others, and so I wanted to touch on what are the other reviews and other activities that are happening that you may hear about or know about or want to follow along as this team progresses. So the vertical line on the slide is where we are in January of 2016. As I've mentioned, the data gathering for this review has been underway for quite a while, and the review itself, which is the second yellow line there, is getting started. There's also the line below that, the green one, is I don't know, it's a little hard to read, but it says Trademark Clearinghouse Independent Review. That is a review that is a commitment based on a GAC recommendation. And so that review is also in progress. The estimated time frame for that to be complete is mid-year, which will probably be around June. There's a session on that at the upcoming ICANN 55 meeting, and that will provide some updates there. The orange line is a study that looks at the impact of the new GTLD program in a more technical area, which is the impact on the of adding many more TLDs on the root server system. There's a study plan. The study team has posted their study plan for public comment. That's open right now. But the current plan does call for a study that goes on for some time into 2017, and that timeline does include also a report and some public comment, which is taken into account. So what I've talked about so far is what we typically talk about when we talk about program reviews, and that includes all of the things that we've been doing to get ready for the CCT review, as well as these other activities. Continuing on down, there's also within the GNSO, which is ICANN's policymaking body for the GTLD space, they have done some work to look from a policy standpoint at the experience of the 2012 round and the implementation of their policy recommendations. They recently have voted to initiate a policy development process on new GTLD subsequent procedures, which would encompass looking at their existing recommendations and considering any changes or possible additions for the future of the program. Their charter for that does note that they expect to be taking into account the findings from parallel activities that are happening within ICANN, and I think specifically they had in mind the CCT review team as part of that. The next bar is still a possibility, but there's also been preliminary step to consider beginning a policy development process that's on rights protection mechanisms. So that is still, that hasn't been kicked off, but that is still a possibility. And if that does occur, the GNSO does have it scoped out so that the scopes of those two efforts would be very clearly delineated, and that there would be very coordinated efforts to make sure that they're not duplicating or coming out with inconsistent outcomes. And just to be clear on the notes there, the timeline of a PDP is dependent on the working group. They established their work plan and their timeline. A policy development process typically takes at least a year, and these are fairly complex, so they're extended out here, but just to be clear, I'm not speaking on behalf of the GNSO or any of the working groups as to what their timeline might be. It's just an estimate. The last effort that I'll mention at the bottom, which has also been assessed a little bit on the list, is what's called the Health Index, which was also the subject of a recent announcement. So this effort is not new GTLD related. So this is sort of an ICANN-wide project to put some measurability and data around some of the core objectives in ICANN's strategic plan, which call for a healthy, resilient, stable DNS and DNS marketplace. And so both in the sense of looking at the technical health as well as the, you know, marketplace health of the ecosystem, there's an ongoing effort to establish a framework by which we could, on an ongoing basis, make measurements and comparisons as to how we're doing on these objectives every year. So this would be once that index is put in place, that would be an ongoing sort of steady state operation where the same data is considered on a yearly basis or on a regular basis. So I think that covers the background that I wanted to give. I'll turn it back to you, Jonathan, or take any questions from anybody. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Karen. Are there any questions from the group on all of this? I mean, obviously some of the interaction between these things has been a topic of some conversation. So, please speak up if you have some of those questions now about how these various efforts fit into the overall scheme of things. I've seen some questions on the list. Well, this will probably be an ongoing conversation then about these things and how they interact. I know I volunteered to be part of the GTLD Marketplace Health Index volunteer group because I see a strong relationship between what we're doing and what that effort will be doing, even though it's not 100% overlap by any means. But looking at some of these things as inputs into this process is an interesting perspective as well. So there may be instances in which we're going to see some recommendations come out as we're doing our work, and we may incorporate or reinforce those recommendations in our own final report. Jordan, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. I note that there's a lot of simultaneous moving parts here, and I thank Karen for helping us understand all of them. I think that I wonder if we ought to think about whether there's some having explicit liaisons or something between some of these efforts might make sense. I'm a little worried we're getting into a mode where a lot of work is going to happen in sequential chunks. When you look at where sort of the CCT review stands in this last slide relative to other work that's going to look to its findings, such as the GNSO PDP on new GTLD subsequent procedures and the PDP on all RPMs, that those efforts would probably be better served if they had information from us earlier on. And similarly, and I know we've addressed that somewhat in our terms of reference by looking to make interim recommendations, but similarly, on the previous slide, we saw, I think, four other efforts feeding into our work. And I feel like if we wait for those to complete before understanding where they're going, and then in turn we have to make recommendations that are going to feed into other work streams, it's just going to make them all a lot slower and less efficient. Whereas if we somehow had the ability to continuously understand each of the work streams that we're dependent on and work streams that are dependent on us, that might be really helpful for Simon.
So I guess that opens the question about whether or not we have some overlap between the two, between amongst these. need to find the right phrasing here, because that would make for natural liaisons. Otherwise, we need to try and assign liaisons to these various efforts. But I think the idea itself is a good one. Do other people have comments or ideas on this? Are there people that are already serving as part of some of these other efforts? Like I said, I'm trying to be part of the Marketplace Health Index effort, so I could be a natural liaison there.
Yeah, people agree with the general concept. We could presumably sort of solicit opportunities for natural liaisons on the various lists or start to figure out how to assign them.
That's right. Do people like the idea generally? Thanks, Carlos. So, I mean, just to sum up Jordan's recommendation, it is that we try to maintain semi-regular communication between our review team and these other efforts so that none of them get too far ahead of each other. So what we will do is look as these groups form for natural liaisons because there's overlapping participants, and then where there's a hole, we'll try to assign a liaison from our team to that team. So hopefully, staff, if you're able to capture that, then let's keep this as a active list of liaisons, and that we'll try to build out as these teams come together. Great, Karen, thank you. Okay, any other questions about Karen's presentation? Okay, I guess we can move on. So the next thing on the agenda is just a little bit of a discussion of the specific effort that went before in preparation for this review. At the ICANN meeting in Cartagena, the board resolved to ask the GNSO and ALAC for a set of data sources and possible metrics for measuring consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition, and to provide some targets, some potential targets or deltas that could be used to evaluate that data by this review team. And so it was the job of that work group to come up with a set of metrics. It ended up splintering a little bit, so 40 came from the GNSO and another 30 came from ALAC. So as Ravi said, we ended up with quite a few of these metrics. I'm wondering if it's possible, Lisa, for you to bring up just a sample page from the report of the work group on the metrics to show how they were structured.
Yes, we uploaded that, and I think Sharla is going to bring that page up now. This is the beginning of that, but there are several pages of this, and we have a couple of documents in the background materials section of the wiki that reference these metrics. So you can find the full document on there as well.
So thank you very much for bringing this up. So you can start to see how this ended up being the actual report from the implementation advisory group. Skipping ahead a little bit, and I'll go back and talk about that group a little bit. But you can see sort of how these ended up being structured in that under each area, trust, choice, and competition, there was some data. So DNS service of availability, availability for registration data and directory services, service availability, percentage of service availability for shared registration services, et cetera. There was a notation of where that data would come from, and then a projected target. So the idea being the three-year target so that we could look at, in this review team, a year out, see if that metric, that data was sort of on the right track to reach that target after 3 years. So that was the structure of the work of the original work group. And so then the implementation advisory group that then, I guess we can go back to the slide if you would, that was the next step. So there were 70 such metrics that came out of the original effort, and some of them had hard targets, and others just said that they should increase rather than decrease, and then some it was difficult to determine what the target should be. And we may find that the ones where it's difficult to identify a target are less useful, but because it was difficult to determine how to interpret the data when we came across it. So, for example, use of URL shorteners, for example, was one of the metrics that was proposed, and it was very difficult to ascertain what conclusions we might draw from that, and therefore what the three-year target should be for that data. So the IAG made recommendations about which of these data points should carry forward based on whether or not they might be useful, whether that data might be useful in context of the review, even though we didn't know in isolation what that data would represent in terms of progress or backsliding on the particular objective. So that was sort of the work of the implementation advisory group, was to look at each of these, figure out if we can in fact get the data, one thing, and if we couldn't, then we removed it. Figure out if it would actually be useful, and get rid of it if we couldn't agree that that data collection would be useful. The IAG also looked at whether or not the data would be useful, would be available after the fact. So that group was very focused on whether or not data was going to go away and needed to be collected contemporaneously. Some of the data that might need to be requested or studied now, it was ascertained by the group that it could be done now by a decision of the review team and didn't need to be collected in advance. So that was sort of the work of the IAG on these particular metrics. In addition, there was a discussion of pricing, and in the market that led to the idea of doing this economic study and trying to understand what the marketplace looked like and taking a snapshot of it, and that led to the analysis group report being part of the interim recommendations of that implementation advisory group, and you've seen that report, because there was some concern in the IAG about some of the rather stranger pricing strategies that were cropping up, sunrise pricing versus general availability pricing and things like that. And so trying to figure out how to capture a snapshot of what that looked like at the beginning of the program and what it looked a year out was the purpose of the study. It was also determined that it was very difficult to measure consumer trust without asking consumers, and so that's why the idea of the survey was born in the IAG as well. And so, as you saw, the Nielsen survey, both as a baseline and then now the upcoming one in the summer, that will be the year-out version in order to see if there's some delta in how consumers are perceiving the GTLD market and the DNS generally. Do you want to go back to the slide that you had it before, Sharla? So those were the deliberations that you see here in the second box that led to, I guess I would say, three things, a few things, a slight winnowing down of the metrics as a whole, but as Ravi suggested, they'll probably be winnowed down considerably more by us. A discussion of what needed to be done externally with these studies, so the economic study and the survey. We got a request to the board that they approved that led to those studies. And then also the beginning of the staff collecting data, so that they could begin to have the data available by the time that this review began. So staff began data collection, and they started sharing it on the ICANN website as they were collecting it as well. I feel like it's been important to remind people that the both the economic study and the survey were meant to be baselines and that we're going to look at the deltas, but there are some interesting observations made in the baseline as well. So that's been the process as a whole. It was a work group followed by the IAG, some interim recommendations, 66 of the 70 metrics carried forward. The staff began collecting the ones that they could on their own, and now it's up to us to identify if there's other data that needs to be collected after the fact for analysis, and I know Stan will have some recommendations there, and that leads us to where we are today with the CCTRT. Any questions about the process that's gone before? And Aliza, did you want to dive in a little bit deeper on a couple of the things that some of the decisions we made in the IAG?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, and feel free to interrupt me with any questions. We only have a few minutes left on our call. I just wanted to speak a little bit more in detail about the data collection that's actually started since last year. So as Jonathan mentioned, a large chunk of that group of 66 that were recommended, we've already begun collecting data on, and you can see here I have a link to the page on the ICANN website where we're publishing, in some instances, snapshots of that data because these come from very large Excel files that we can't really upload in their entirety or capture on a screen, but you can download them on those two pages. So a lot of the metrics data is available there. About a dozen of the metrics were intended to be captured by the surveys. Phase one of which, of course, we've mentioned has been published, and three of them were also going to be captured by the economic study. So that's kind of a big chunk of the metrics pieces. There's other reports that we anticipate will be and hope will be useful to you in the other pieces of this review, not just the CCT piece, but on the effectiveness of the application process. There's the program implementation review, which was published in September of last year, and we anticipate a staff report on that at the end of this month, very soon, as well as the RPM report, which I think Karen mentioned earlier in her section of our discussion. There's also another piece that I think might be relevant to this group and you might be interested in, on which there's a discussion tomorrow on DNS abuse, and I think some of the issues that will be discussed there will help define some of the terms you may consider, some of the terms that are referenced in the metrics that are related to DNS abuse. We're working to kind of define those a little bit better and help us to capture data better in that section. And I've included a link here where there's more details about the discussion that's scheduled to happen tomorrow. I think it's scheduled at two different times, so depending on where you are, hopefully there's a convenient time, and you are welcome to join that. I've posted a lot of information on sort of the background materials that led up to the IAG work and the initial working group that Jonathan mentioned, as well as links to all of these reports, all of these metrics on your wiki page. I'm also working on putting together some additional references on that page that have to do with other sources of data that may be useful. I noted the discussion on the list about the center reports that Megan brought up. Thank you for sharing that. And there's a number of different websites that report statistics. I think Stan earlier mentioned NTLD stats. That's one. There's a couple of other statistics web pages that I think would be interesting to keep in mind as reference points as well. So I'm trying to capture all of those in a logical way on your wiki, so hopefully you'll find those lists available as well. But we wanted to share this with you just so you had an idea of all of the data that is already being captured, and I think some of the discussions that are happening on the list are great, and you may find some information on the wiki that can help help you provide some more context to those discussions. And with that, I think we're nearly out of time. If there are any questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, we can probably end this call. Unless, Jonathan, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I don't think so. Thanks, guys. I think we made good progress. So the two homework assignments are is to go over the terms of reference in detail and make sure that you're happy with what's there and to make recommendations in the very near term if you have them, and also to get in touch if you are willing to be a part of creating the first draft of the work plan. It'll still come back to the entire group for discussion, but for efficiency, we're going to try to do that with a smaller group and get the get that work plan going. And so please volunteer if you can to be a part of that effort. Otherwise, thanks, everyone, and let's keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Ooh.